Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as always, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares were little changed at the open this morning following mixed results in the US and Europe. In early trade, the Straits Times Index rose just 0.03% to 3,219 points after some 61 million securities changed hands in the broader market. As usual, closing numbers are still firming up, but here's what I have on my screen right now. The Straits Times Index currently up just 0.02% at 3,218 points. In terms of value turnover, we are looking at 871 million Sing dollars. Now, gainers outnumbered losers 299 versus 295. To five movers by value, we've got here DBS, Singtel, UOB, OCBC and Genting Singapore. Heavily traded securities, Seatrium, Genting Singapore and Thai Beverage. Now, in terms of companies to watch, we do have Keppel Corp, the global asset manager and operator, achieved its first close for this Keppel Sustainable Urban Renewable Fund. Now, elsewhere, from more on the ASEAN Plus 3 Macroeconomic Research Office's forecast of growth in China and across Asia, to a look ahead to the new earnings season in the US, more international headlines remain in focus. And let's break down the developments with David Kuo, co-founder The Smart Investor. Mr. Kuo, welcome.
Hello, good evening to you. How are you?
Hey, good evening. And let's start with the Singapore stock market as usual. Mr. Kuo, how has the STI fared so far today after the US non-farm payrolls report, where 303,000 jobs were added, way higher than the 200,000 expected?
I know. I mean, that was, I think, bad news as far as the market was concerned, but not as far as American investors were concerned, because the American markets were up on Friday, which I find a little surprising. I mean, those strong employment numbers would seem to suggest that the Federal Reserve is highly unlikely to cut interest rates in June. So all those bets that interest rates were heading lower, I think, have now been taken off the table. So it seems that Asian markets were a little on the mixed side. Here in Singapore, we just sat on our hands, and the stock market was virtually unchanged today. What's interesting, Tianjian, is that some of the banks were up today, which seems to suggest that they are buying into this idea that interest rates are likely to stay higher for longer. And on the same note, if you have a look at the Real Estate Investment Trust, the REIT, many of them were down today, which also seems to suggest that maybe interest rates are going to stay higher for longer. So it's good for banks, bad for REITs.
Right. Don't mind me asking this, Mr. Kuo. As always, you like to look at what businesses are telling us. And this week is going to be the start of the new corporate earnings season in the U.S. Some big names like J.P. Morgan, BlackRock due for the week in the U.S. What story are they going to tell us, and how would that influence maybe Asian markets and also here in Singapore?
I think the bank earnings are going to be good. And I think when you have a look at the American banks, they just seem to be getting bigger and stronger all the time. And that is partly due to the recovery over in the U.S. economy. That seems to be gaining momentum right now, as we saw with those payroll numbers. So I think it puts the central banks in a very difficult position, because what are they going to do? And as far as the other banks are concerned, the investment banks, they don't rightly care, because they just think, well, as long as the economy is doing well, they will do well. And I think that will just filter through across the world. I think most of the banks are going to have fairly good reports, and most American companies are going to be having good reports. But the one that I'm looking at will be a couple of the Japanese companies, in particular fast retailers, which owns Uniqlo. They'll be reporting sometime either this week or next week. And I think they're going to tell us pretty much the same story, that there is a global recovery going on, which always begs the question, if there is a global recovery, why do you need to cut interest rates? Why would you want to pour petrol onto the flames of a global recovery? That's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah, that's a tough question, isn't it? And let's put our focus squarely on Singapore right now, Mr. Kuo. We do have Keppel being one of the companies to watch after the global asset manager and operator achieved the first close for its Keppel Sustainable Urban Renewable Fund. Now, Keppel said today that this brings total funds under management in its sustainable urban renewal strategy to more than $1.7 billion. Your thoughts?
Well, this is all about refurbishing old buildings and rather than tear down old buildings and build new ones. I mean, what this fund is going to do is to try and make use of existing buildings, try and make them more sustainable, try and convert them in some ways to be greener. And I think everybody knows that that is desperately needed. We only have to step outside today to see how hot it is in Singapore, and we don't really want the temperature rising any more than it is, Tianjin. So I think we all need to do our bit. I mean, the amount that has been raised, $1.7 billion, is not great in the grand scheme of things, but if everybody does their little bit, including Keppel, then I think the world might be a slightly more pleasant place to live in.
Right, it's been really scorching hot, Mr. Kuo.
Tell me about it.
Now, from Keppel, let's go to Straits Trading Company. The investment company is selling one of its industrial properties in South Australia for 52 million Aussie dollars, or around 46 million Sing dollars, which is below valuation. Now, the group said on Friday that the proposed sale is not expected to have a material impact on earnings per share and net tangible assets per share for the group for the financial year ended December 2023. That being said, is there anything that we should look up for, though?
Well, the thing is, I mean, this is below the current market valuation. And some people may say, why would you want to do that? But always, when you sell something, it's not what you get for what you are selling, in this case the property, is what you do with the funds that you generate from that. And I think in the case of Straits Trading, what they are planning to do is to put that money into other assets that will hopefully be able to either generate a greater capital gain for them or greater revenue. And I think that applies not just to buildings, but also to the shares that you have bought previously. Never look at the shares that you had bought previously and say, I don't want to sell until it goes back to my buy price, because that is the wrong way of looking at things. You say, right, this is the price at the moment. This is what I'm being offered for it. I get the money and I'll put it into something else, some other investment that will hopefully generate a better return. So never look back, always look forwards, Tianjin.
Right. And if you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Across the region, Mr. Kuo, we've got a report by the ASEAN Plus 3 Macroeconomic Research Office, or MRO, saying that China's economy is set to expand 5.3% this year as the property sector stabilizes, external demand improves, and helping to lift growth in the region. And this seems even more ambitious than what the official forecast from China was. I mean, recently, just today, we saw how a property developer, Shimao Group, said China Construction Bank Asia filed a liquidation petition against it. So how far do you agree with the projections then? 5.3% big numbers?
I don't agree with it at all, because I think, to be fair to AMRO, AMRO, their report was probably compiled before today's announcement about the liquidation of Shimao. But I think generally what we do know is that it's going to take a long time for Chinese property market to recover. And I'm talking about the property market. It's going to take a long time for that to recover. So unless you get confidence in an economy, and China is probably hoping for consumer spending to drive some of its economic growth, it's looking at other things also. It's probably sort of looking at its electric vehicles and other industries that will be able to drive economic growth. But in general, I mean, the big bulk of any kind of economic growth will come from consumer spending. And if consumers aren't feeling confident because the property that they live in is worth less than what they actually paid for it, they're not going to feel that great. And if they don't feel that great, they're not going to go out and spend money, and that is going to be a drag on the economy. So whilst everybody's entitled to their own opinion about what they think the economic growth is going to be, I think maybe 5.3% in the case of AMRO is a little optimistic, I think.
And the AMRO, staying on the topic, Mr. Kuo, also forecasts that growth across the ASEAN nations plus China, Japan and South Korea will expand 4.5% this year from 4.3% last year. How sensitive then is Asia's growth to China's recovery, in your opinion?
I think very sensitive. I don't think anybody can sort of hold up their hands and say it's going to be independent of what goes on in China. Because, I mean, even if you have a look at some of our neighboring countries, say Malaysia, they are heavily dependent on what goes on inside China. And so, yes, I think ASEAN will grow. Whether it will grow without the likes of China is a different matter altogether.
Yeah.
I think Japan will grow. I think South Korea will definitely grow. I think ASEAN will be fine. But whether or not it will be able to achieve that 4.5% target will depend on what really happens during the rest of the year. But without China, it's going to be very difficult, which is probably why Janet Yellen is over in China at the moment, just concluding her meeting, because they know that the world without China is going to be a very different world, and they do need China to be able to solve its problems. But it's not for me to say how China is going to solve its problems. Well, it can be what I think about what China needs to do, but I don't think China will listen to what I have to say, though.
Right. Now, in the meantime, Mr. Guo, let's set our sights on India, right? HSBC is engaging with over 200 overseas funds to help establish their presence in India, and this is ahead of India's entry into global debt indices. I believe India's sovereign debt is set to be added to JP Morgan Chase's emerging market gauge starting from June. So in layman terms, Mr. Guo, what does it mean for investors with India's sovereign debt added to this emerging market gauge? And again, what should we look up for here?
Okay, I think there are two things that we need to bear in mind. If more people are going to be buying Indian bonds, it means that the interest rates on those bonds will start to come down, because that's the way it works. If more people are piling in and buying Indian bonds, then the interest rates will come down. So that will benefit the country, definitely. And the second thing, of course, is if more people are buying Indian bonds, it therefore means that perhaps the Indian banks won't have to buy the Indian bonds or as much of the Indian bonds as they have done previously, because they were the big buyers of Indian sovereign debt. It means that the banks will be able to use some of the cash that they would have spent on Indian bonds on other things, on infrastructure projects, maybe lending to consumers. So I think it is a positive. I think it is a big game changer for India to be added to the global bond index, because it means that more money will be flowing into India, which is badly needed. And anyone who's been to India will know that infrastructure is definitely something that is high on the agenda for the Indian government. And I think this will make it much, much easier for India.
Well, it is definitely a plus for India, right? What opportunities are there for both institutional and retail investors who are investing in India then?
Well, it just means that you'll be able to pump money into those funds. I mean, previously, those Indian bonds were not readily available. And so therefore, now it means that retail investors, as well as institutional investors, will have access much more easily. I mean, it's really no different, Tian, to me wanting to buy Indian shares. It's impossible for me as a non-Indian or a non-Indian resident to actually buy Indian shares.
Yeah.
The only way I can buy Indian company shares is to actually go through the American stock market and buy the depository receipts there. I cannot buy Indian shares no matter how much I want to. It is impossible. And so I think, you know, this is one step in the right direction. And I think it means that now bonds are readily available for people who are non-Indians. And I think if they go one step further and make the stock market more readily available, then I think that will benefit India enormously.
Right. Mr. Guo, let's wrap up the conversation by talking about coffee, badly in need of one right now. China's coffee market is in the midst of a price war and it's showing no signs of abating. Luckin Coffee faces down challenger Coty Coffee. I believe Coty Coffee was founded by some of the previous leaders of Luckin Coffee. Starbucks has said it is not entering the price war and China is focusing on sustainable growth. So the guess, as always, is who will prevail in the end?
I think it'll be Starbucks, because I think what Starbucks is doing is they're stepping aside and allowing Coty and also Luckin to actually have their price war. And if you are going to enter a price war, you better make sure you have enough ammunition, and ammunition in the form of cash. Because if you don't, what will generally happen is that your profit margins will start to get squeezed, and all the money that you could have spent on expanding your business will just be taken up by this petty war between two coffee companies. And you are right. I mean, Cotti Coffee, the newer of the two, was started by two disgraced founders of Luckin Coffee. And they think that they'll be able to take on Luckin. But I'll leave you with one thought, Tian Tian. It's a little poem, a little ditty that I wrote many, many years ago, right? So, revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, cash is reality, and everything else is pomposity. Yeah, and so as far as this is concerned, they're going for revenue, right? Mm. And that is vanity, and it is a vanity war between these two companies. As far as Starbucks is concerned, they're more concerned about cash. And as an investor, I look at companies' cash flow and I say, will Starbucks be able to pay me my dividends in the next quarter? Yeah. And that's all I care about. And so I think Starbucks is right to step out of the fray and allow these two companies, and I think they'll slug it out, and I think they could end up both as losers as a result of this price war unless they wake up. And maybe, right, you know, they need to wake up and smell the coffee.
That is so you, Mr. Kuo. Thanks for the insights. That was David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.